This is Renegade Broadcasting.
Everybody, happy Friday. We're at the end of another week here. My. A week from now, we'll just about be at the end of freaking January. Jeez. Unbelievable. In fact, a week from today will be my last show of the month of January. Man, oh man. But at the same time, every day that goes by, we're getting closer and closer to the spring, even though we really haven't entered into the thicket of the winter yet. Oh, God. We're supposed to get a frickin' blizzard tomorrow, but I guess now they've updated their forecast, and it looks like we're only going to get 2 or 3 inches. That's still 2 or 3 inches too much for me, but it's not going to be the massive inundation they were talking about. They're saying that down the Cape, they're going to get hit a lot worse near the coast. It's weird. The Cape usually gets the opposite of what we do. If we get dumped on, they get rain or something, you know, or vice versa. And that's the case here. They're going to get dumped on, and we're just going to get a dusting in comparison. Very strange. I wouldn't want to live down the Cape, though, I'll tell you. Beautiful place. Love to visit there, but I have a profound respect for the ocean. I've seen what it can do, and I would not want to live anywhere in 10 or 15 miles of it. I just don't trust it. At any given moment, your house can be toast. Years ago, my brother rented a place down there. We spent a few days with him. And it was right after there was a big storm. I forget now. It was the early 90s. We had a hurricane. Anyway, where he was, the house he stayed at was untouched because it was set back just far enough that the waves didn't do any damage. But all the houses around, just about every one of them, was devastated. You know, there were signs up, condemned. Some of them, you know, the signs were up just because of water damage. But some of them were just demolished. I mean, just rubble. Unbelievable. Luckily, I guess, you know, people evacuated. But, geez, it doesn't matter. No. Even if you manage to escape, you know, your house and everything in it is going to be demolished. Why? I don't understand it. People who like to live right near the water, you're taking a hell. Kind of like living in the Midwest. I wouldn't want to live there either. Constantly having the threat of a tornado hanging over your head. Now, granted, you know, most people go through life and they're not devastated by a tornado. But you could be. The chances are pretty high. I mean, they get those things almost on a daily basis. Every time, you know, a set of storm clouds moves in, you got to wonder, oh, my God, are we going to get one? I couldn't live like that. No. Nope. No thanks. I mean, technically, those frickin' things can strike anywhere, but, you know, they're very common in the Midwest. Very common. Here in Massachusetts, they're almost unheard of. And even when they hit here, they're usually out in the western part of the state. I couldn't live in an area like that where you really, literally, constantly had that threat. Even when there isn't a tornado, the Midwest has some bitch lightning, thunder and lightning storms. I mean, they're freaking scary, man. I've never seen anything like it. I was out there one time, and I was riding with a friend. We had gone to the store to pick some stuff up. On the way home, boom, out of nowhere, it struck. And we were on a back road, a dirt road, and the road is washing out. You know, we're swaying to the right, swaying to the left, you know. One part was literally just collapsing. So, we had to swerve, you know, so we didn't get stuck in a rut. And then the next thing you know, there was another washout. Whoa, we had to divert around that. The road was literally just, you know, crumbling beneath us. And in the meantime, there were literally dozens of lightning blasts all around us at any given moment. The whole sky lit up like daylight, and the tremendous blast sound from the thunder was just deafening. My God, man, it scared the Christ out of me. I really thought we were going to buy the farm. In fact, we both looked at each other and, you know, we're like, this could be it. We really thought we were goners. I mean, we were like the only thing standing above ground level, even though we were in a car. You know, you're supposed to be grounded in a car. It didn't matter. It looked pretty fatal. Scary as hell. I wouldn't want to live like that. They got some killer storms. Anyways, enough of that. Yeah, I got an email yesterday. One of my listeners sent me some updated statistics on the death toll from the Civil War. I said, what was it, 666,000 or something like that. More accurate estimates now, historians are saying, after pouring over more data and, you know, more records from that era, they estimate that there were 750,000 deaths. Unbelievable, ladies and gentlemen. 750,000 people. One thing I was wrong on, I was just guessing. I don't know why I thought it was that little. I think, what did I guess? 5 or 6 million? No. It was 31,443,321. I don't know how they could get it that accurate, but, you know, from census reports and whatnot. But, you know, over 30 million. But still, this is 750,000. So that, yeah, that's roughly 1/30 of the population. That's pretty scary. That's a pretty large number. Anyway, and, you know, once again, guys, it didn't have to happen. That's what's so freaking disgusting. Lincoln has been getting a free ride for way too long. More than a free ride. He's basically exalted to godlike status. He's, you know, a great American hero, as I mentioned yesterday. He was no such thing. That same listener sent me a great clip. Some historians were, you know, reassessing Lincoln and saying, no, he wasn't a hero for the same reasons, you know, I was talking yesterday. The way he trashed the Constitution, he was absolutely, he turned this government into a dictatorship. And it's been such ever since. It's gotten worse, of course. You know, FDR advanced that agenda massively forward, creating a national state of emergency, which we're still under. You know, it's never been revoked. And, you know, all of his freaking executive orders and so many more, you know, since that time. Every president has acted as a dictator, you know, getting us involved in war after war after endless war illegally. without the constitutionally required congressional declaration of war. That's been the case since World War II. Not that that war was legitimate, but at least we legitimately entered it as far as the Constitution goes. Yeah, you know, Congress did declare war. That doesn't make it right, but it makes it legal. But every war since then, and we've been involved in over 60 military conflicts since World War II, and not one of them has been legal. None of them have been legit, but they have not been legal either. El Presidente does not become, quote, commander-in-chief until Congress declares war. The president doesn't have the authority to dispense troops unless Congress, the stuff Americans frickin' fall for. The stuff they allow, that they accept, that they ignore. Can you believe that so very many millions of people, what are we at now, 300 plus, 350, I lost count, whatever. Hundreds of millions of people can be bamboozled by just a small handful of scum. It just blows my ever-loving mind. Of course, you know, you look at that on the global scale and it's the same thing. The statistics are even worse because now you're dealing with, 6.5 billion people that are being misled by an infinitesimally small percentage of the population. How can this be? How can this be? Don't you wish you could, even just for 5 minutes, collectively control the entire population so that their thoughts were aligned with yours, their actions with yours? This whole frickin' new world order thing would have been over yesterday. Well, yesterday, a long time ago, but you know what I'm saying. If I just found out about this agenda today, I would have ended it yesterday, if you know what I mean. I would have wasted no time. Collectively, with the population in line with my thoughts, I would have told them where to go and how to get there. It would be over. You wouldn't even have to rise up, ladies and gentlemen. You wouldn't have to. If collectively the people just flipped them the bird and said, hey, go to hell. We're not complying. We're not doing a damn thing. The whole thing would shut down and they'd piss themselves. They would. Noncompliance. You do nothing. You don't even go to work. The whole system would shut down. And then because we have them so greatly outnumbered, it'd be very easy to take the system, to take it into the hands of the people. It'd be very easy. Far too many of us. There would be people who would all of a sudden now crawl out of the woodwork that ordinarily wouldn't have said anything or done anything. Now, if they see that the whole population has woken up, and when I say control the world population with my thinking, I'm talking about real human beings, decent people in conscience who give a damn. There are a lot of people out there who would give a damn if they knew, if they could get past their programming and actually, you know, see things for what they really are. But that's the problem. There's so many people out there who, even though they have a conscience, they are decent people, they're not going to wake up. That's what's so goddamn astonishing. They have a conscience and would respond accordingly if they knew. But they don't want to know. They don't want their cozy world upset. And, you know, somehow deep in the the recesses of their mind, they really don't want to hear this. They don't want to admit that the world could be that freaked up. Yeah, you think I want to live in a world like this? You think I want to acknowledge this? I it's not pleasant, but I have to. I can't hide my head in the sand in the wake of the reality of this frigged up world. I've encountered this myself many times over the years. You share this stuff with people and you can tell that they suspect what you're saying is true, but they stick their head in the sand. They don't want to deal with it. That's pretty sad. That kind of deliberate, willful, diversion away from reality. That's what rolls the red carpet out for these SOBs to do what they want to do. You're actually helping to facilitate their scheming and scamming. Pretty sad, but there are, in fact, a lot of people like that. They do have a conscience. They do care about the world being run properly and justly and the law being upheld and applying to everybody, not just the swelling low-level masses. But they just, for various reasons, they just don't want to deal with it. They live in denial. They sweep it under the rug. It's too much for them to handle. It's freaking sad. But anyway, like I said, if you could get those kind of people woken up at the drop of a dime, somehow if you could get your minds such that you could collectively get everybody to think like you, we could turn this bitch around. We could. Overnight. We could do it. But, what are the chances of that? I'm all for mind control, ladies and gentlemen. I think it's a great thing. If it could be used in the right way, I would love to mind control the masses out there, the ignoramus, stupid idiots, for their own good. That would be great, wouldn't it? Just like I'm all for tyranny. I would love a totalitarian government that snuffed out the bastards that have been screwing us for centuries on end. I'm all for tyranny. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've often said, make me Superman for a day, impervious to missiles, bombs, bullets. God damn it, I would do some serious freaking damage. I know who to go after and where to find them. God damn it. There wouldn't be one pin left standing when I was done. I'm all for tyranny when it involves bringing justice and setting this world straight the way it should be. Absolutely. Ruthless tyranny. That's what this world needs. Go after the scum that are frigging us over. The world needs a douching, ladies and gentlemen. Real bad. Anyway, back to this scumbag stinking Lincoln here. As I said at the close of yesterday's show, nowhere in any high school or college history class or textbook can any of this information, this summation, for example, of the taxes paid by the South in relation to those paid by the North, it's just not there. You're not going to find it. They paid an exorbitant, way out of proportion amount. Can you blame the South for rebelling? They had every right to, first of all. They had every right to secede. Can you blame them, though? Even if you don't agree, let's say they didn't have a good reason for wanting to secede. It doesn't matter. Secession was their legal right. They didn't need to provide a good reason, that other people had to agree with to approve of their secession. They're the only ones that needed to approve. But the whole point is they had tons of good reasons for wanting to secede. There's tons of good reasons for every state in this union to secede today. Completely separate from that bitch system in Washington and say, frig you, and have them all operate independently, except for the Constitution, Yeah. There was talk about it under Georgie Boy, if you may recall. Of course, that's all it was talk. But quite a few states were claiming, maybe it was just all rhetoric, public freaking propaganda. Who knows? Probably, most likely. But, the state of Vermont was talking about it. Texas was talking about it. I think New Hampshire was contemplating it. It should have been done. I don't know how the whole Republican Party wasn't forcefully disbanded. I really don't. After the crap pulled by that little bastard. Not that the Democratic Party isn't, that sucks ass too. But guys, oh man, in my lifetime, there has never been anything the likes of what we saw under that bastard's administration. Absolutely freaking incredible. And yet most Americans didn't even see what was going on right under their freaking noses. Holy Christ, man. And I'm not even talking, about 9/11. Well, I am talking about that, but my God, that was only one. It was a big one, but that was only one. There were others just as big or actually even worse as far as the scope of the effects that the criminal activities of that bastard administration had on the country as a whole. Christ. It was nonstop. The massive hemorrhaging of jobs, the hemorrhaging of the economy, the bailout, the wide open borders fiasco. Jesus. More debt accrued under that bastard's watch than all previous presidents combined. I don't know, man. And that you can't get people to realize what the hell, that this was by freaking design? Anyway, the real reason for the South's wanting to withdraw from the Union is never mentioned. I mean, there were many, but one of the biggest guys was the tyranny in Washington and, their not only this unfair taxation thing, but just this power grab that they recognized El Presidente was engaged in. They knew it was treason. They were called the treasonists, but yet it was the bastards in Washington that were the treasonists. Any fair-minded person knowing just about this tax scam that was going on would readily agree that the South had a rightful reason for leaving the Union. They didn't need a rightful reason. Like I said, they could leave just because they wanted to. But when you realize what was going on, my God, how could you not side with the Confederacy? Seriously. Not the bastards in Charleston, that had their sleazy ulterior motives for wanting to rebel. But I'm just saying, the South in general. To side with, the people, not the scum running the South, just like the scum running the North. There was scum down there running that whole operation. I'm talking about the people themselves, the motives they had for wanting to secede. Yeah, how could you argue with them? God damn it, looking back, I wish they won. And after winning, I wish they marched into Charleston and slaughtered all the bastards there that, were frigging them over too. But I do. I wish the South won. We wouldn't be in half the mess we're in right now. How different things would have been, ladies and gentlemen. You wouldn't have had the concentration of power in Washington like you have today. You wouldn't have had a Federal Reserve. The South couldn't correct this tax incongruity by remaining in the Union because it didn't have as many representatives in Washington as did the North. There was no other way, guys. They had to secede. They didn't have a freaking choice. Anyway, Lincoln's vaunted Emancipation Proclamation was not what most people make of it. It applied only to states that had withdrawn from the Union and were not under his control, i.e., the states in rebellion. There were slave states, again, in the Union, Kentucky, Maryland, Delaware, and Missouri. And slavery existed in Washington until 1862. And the Emancipation Proclamation didn't even apply there. So, I mean, it's a sick joke, like so much else that we're sold through our BS propaganda, frickin' media, the education system. It's just not true. All the rhetoric that we've had crammed down our throats over the years about this bastard, it's all BS. Where Lincoln could free slaves, he would not. So he was not by any means the slave liberating hero that he's been made out to be. He had control over the Union states, and yet he didn't demand of them to free their slaves, guys. It's a joke. He didn't give a damn about freedom, emancipation. That was just the rhetoric he used later to conveniently cloak his campaign to achieve absolute totalitarian power. That's all it was. And again, the fact that the Civil War never had to happen. He wanted it to happen. False frickin' flag operation to ensure. And then, of course, he pretended later that, oh, you know, our nation is reddened with the blood of its most noblest sons. What a tragedy. Oh, yeah, right. That you orchestrated, you little monkey. Lincoln set up domestic Guantanamo bays, if you will, where he had some 4,000 to 6,000 people locked up for questioning his highly questionable activities. Lincoln's Secretary of War, Edward Stanton, who was, of course, a tribe member, oversaw a massive federal spy network of proto-homeland security goons. Imagine. You know, some people actually naively think that what happened under Georgie Boy with the massive power grab that took place in the wake of 9/11 was something unique. And I've heard it said, unprecedented in American history. Unprecedented. Really? Really now? Perfidious ignorance. And, you know, again, you try to tell these people, oh, maybe it's just a matter of them not knowing what Lincoln did. Okay, well, all I got to do is simply show them, look what Lincoln did. No, they don't want to hear it. Just like religion, guys, they don't want to hear it. You try to show them, hey, look, buddy, your book is not infallible. I tell you, man, it's loaded with freaking contradictions and inconsistencies and errors and outright lies. And nope, out come the earplugs and the blindfolds. They don't want to hear it, don't want to see it. They don't want their cozy little nest upset. They don't want to be told that they're standing on a cracked foundation and are about to fall at any given moment. God damn it, it's so disgusting dealing with freaking upset. All right, guys, short break. Stick with us. Be right back.
Feminization of men has been a big part of the Semitic takeover of the European people.
Mindless goddamn drones that can buy into this. Do you know how many billions
Trump's call on Monday to halt the entrance of Muslims to the U.S. is driving online chatter among white supremacists and is likely...
They're so inundated with the pop culture, and I think people like us are trying to kind of remove ourselves from that.
Renegade Broadcasting.
Hey guys, welcome back. So Lincoln had his little thugs sent out spying, looking for potential traitors. There was Lafayette Baker, the head of his little spy network, and his and the Pinkertons. This mob saw themselves literally as above the law. They were Lincolnian inquisitors, if you will. Goddamn American Inquisition. Allegedly, Baker and others profited handsomely from the sale of confiscated frickin' contraband cotton, which they stole from the federal government to line their own pockets. All kinds of outlandish corruption was going on. You think Lincoln didn't know about this? Better yet, you think he gave a damn? They were given absolute authority, just like the Inquisitors. The Inquisitors were sent out with, you know, they were a law unto themselves with impunity. Dominican friars, you know, they would usually send out in the middle of the night. They would bang on your door at 3 a.m. Once you heard that, you knew you were a frickin' goner. If you had the means to kill yourself, you would be, you know, would have been better off to do it right there. Just end it right there, because these bastards are going to haul you off, torture the Christ out of you over the next several months. And if that doesn't kill you first, they're only going to turn around and burn you at the goddamn stake anyway. Horrific, slow, painful, dragged out death through the torturing and then the ultimate burning at the stake. It didn't matter what you said, what you didn't say. You were toast. And these bastards had absolute totalitarian authority. Nobody could question them. They were above the law. That's the kind of crap Lincoln had going on here, ladies and gentlemen. Not only could they and did they target anybody they wanted that did so much as looked at them funny, but they had the precedent, really. Not officially on paper, but, you know, they were given sanction to frickin' steal whatever the hell they wanted, and they did. It is said that Baker put a mysterious $150,000 into his bank account in 1 year, which was certainly not from his frickin' salary. You know, that's a pretty sizable chunk of money today, but back then, that was multiplied millions of dollars by today's standards. And that's just what he openly... you know, made known by, on paper. You know, what did he have behind closed doors that nobody knew about? It was all stolen, ladies and gentlemen. Look at the corruption that went on here. Anyway, on April 14th, 1865, of course, Lincoln was shot by John Wilkes Booth. In Booth's trunk, coded messages were found, and the key to the code was found among the possessions of, guess who, Mr. Judah Benjamin, a tribal lawyer and politician who served as a Rothschild agent for the Confederacy. But don't get too excited when you realize that he was murdered by tribe members. Yeah, he was. But he was also, as we're going to see in the next set of notes I'll be covering, probably won't get to that until Monday, or maybe later today. I'll start it anyway. He was supported by tribe members of the North. But, you know, his worst detractors were tribe members of the South. And as I said before, it really doesn't matter if this seeming dichotomy was real or not. It doesn't matter if the tribe members of the North, who at least seemed to be adamantly opposed to the tribe members of the South, it doesn't matter if that animosity was real or not. What matters is they were tribe members controlling everything on both sides. And isn't that always how it works? They love to create two seemingly opposed schools of thought, and yet it being in control of them, of both of them at the same time. Indeed, having created both of them and been controlling them at the same time. Guys, this has played itself out so very many times down through the centuries. Sometimes a third school of thought arises, which is also controlled by them, but usually it's just two. And the masses never catch on. Just like today, they never catch on that Republicans, Democrats, doesn't matter, it's the same goddamn thing. Two sides of the same coin, the same bastards running both sides. Sometimes, especially at the lower levels of the ladder, there is genuine opposition amongst tribe members. But at the top, no. No, at the top, they know full well what's going on. They're the ones orchestrating it. They really don't give a damn. But, you know, my guess would be the reason they had him murdered. Nobody cared on either side, really. Even the ones that supported him, it was all fake. They were pretending to support him just so they could manipulate him. And even though he was one of them, as we'll see, he was. He was a tribe member. But don't forget, guys, they sacrificed their own. But I think ultimately, you know, those in the South did hate him because, yeah, you know, he did lead to the cessation of their, the very profitous slave-dependent enterprises. So they murdered him. But, like I said, guys, at the highest levels, they don't care. Do you think the tribe members cared any more, than those in the South? They didn't care which way the war ended, really. I mean, they prefer it that the North win and that they get their tyrannical concentration of power in Washington. But even if the South won, their purposes still would have been served because they were controlling that too. And what we would have had is a dictatorship established down there, starting with Jefferson Davis. Unfortunately, guys, because the way the system is rigged, and they're the ones rigging it, they come up with a winning hand every time. And until the masses wake up to that, and if they wake up to it, and that's a big if, it's never going to change. It's never going to stop. This game has worked flawlessly for them through the centuries. No, look in the era of the Crusades, Muslims and Christians fighting each other. Little did the masses of Muslims and Christians realize that at the highest levels, the tribe was controlling both sides. My God. And then later, you know, you had the Protestant Reformation. Who was controlling that at the highest levels? On both sides! Both freaking sides! Like I said, I got a show coming up on, Soviet Russia. The communists on one side, the Zionists on the other. It seemed like two completely incompatible. And that's how it looked on the surface. Yeah, totally incompatible. And yet both sides being controlled by the tribe at the highest level. God damn it. like I said, there's a lot of truthers that don't even see this. They don't even recognize that this is their handiwork. They'll actually use that to argue, oh, she was out against communism. Look how much the communists were opposed to the Zionists. Oh, God damn it. They must sit back and love it. They must love that this little scheme of theirs has worked so flawlessly, even though they've done it again and 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 again. Even though it should be most painfully obvious by now, since they've done it so many frickin' times. No, people never, ever figure it out. And they love it when there are genuine low-level dupe tribe members that fall for it and don't figure it out. They love that because that helps to buttress the delusion that there's no Jewish conspiracy. Anyway, as I said, in Booth's trunk, there was this coded message, a series of coded messages that were found. And the key to the code, again, was found among the possessions of Mr. Judah Benjamin. After the war, of course, he fled to England, where he later died. In 1974, researchers found, among War Secretary Stanton's papers, letters describing a conspiracy cover-up that were either written to Stanton or intercepted by him. They also found the 18 pages that were removed from Booth's diary, which revealed the names of 70 people, some in code, who were directly or indirectly involved in Booth's plans. From this source, it was revealed that Charles A. Dana, Assistant Secretary of War, and Major Thomas Eckert, Chief of the War Department's Telegraph Office, were also involved. Lincoln was clearly murdered by the very powers that he worked for, Rothschild banking interests and their minions here in the U.S., probably for the purpose of making him look, you know, like a martyr for the patriotic cause of standing up to the bankers, when in reality, he served them till his dying day. Were there some in that crowd that had other reasons for wanting him dead that really were pissed off with him for getting rid of slavery? Yeah, undoubtedly. But there were also some among them who were faking to be opposed to him because of getting rid of slavery, who really didn't care either way. They always got a backup plan anyway, guys. They never depend on one single stream of income for their sustenance. You can call that sustenance when they're living high off the hog. Don't forget, when you're dealing with these people, everything is an illusion. Everything. Everything. You've got to learn to think outside the box. That's what they're doing. They want to keep you in the box by throwing out these false paradigms, these phony, misleading trails of popcorn. Most people fall for it every time. You've got to understand that the ideologies that they get people sucked into are their creation. And once you realize that, there's no confusion. And when you realize that, yeah, they got a long history of killing their own, that's no surprise.
Well, why would they kill Lincoln if he was working for them? Or if he was even, in fact, one of them?
They kill their own all the time when it serves their interests. Look what a hero they've made out of him. And look at the distraction that's created so people don't realize the treason that actually took place at his hand. By hailing him as a hero, and in their thinking, he is a hero. He did exactly what they wanted him to do. Because he was, in fact, one of them. But there was enough animosity, genuine animosity, in the high ranks who wanted him dead that they figured, okay, well, fine. Yeah, we'll kill him. Yeah, we got what we already needed from him. Yeah, we'll kill him and make him a martyr, and that'll help to rally people behind him all the more and get them to embrace this guy as a hero, so they'll never recognize him for the traitor that he was. Here it is, 151 years later, after his death, and people are still singing his praises, for the most part, still have not figured out what he was really all about. So you see how effective the assassination plot was? If they didn't assassinate him, people wouldn't be so half endearing toward him. That's why people warm up to Jackie and think she's such a wonderful person. Oh, the horror that poor woman had to endure. You see how that gets people rallied behind scum? Thinking she was just as much a victim in this as JFK, they're not looking at her actions in that limo. Had somebody email me last night asking about, you know, what kind of gun did Jackie use? He was sharing this with somebody, and that was the first objection they raised. They don't stop to look at or to even realize that there's no question she had a gun. You can see the puff of smoke, ladies and gentlemen, rising up from behind Kennedy's neck, to the left of Kennedy's neck. You see a white puff of smoke coming from the murder weapon that's in her frickin' hand. And again, you know, the trail of the bullet, it's no question she was the killer. But they say, oh, no, there was no gun small enough that she could have concealed. Well, first of all, the CIA has and always has had access to weapons and other little high-tech toys that the general public not only does not have access to, but very often isn't even aware of. Who knows what actual weapon she was using? But there were guns in circulation at that time to the general public that could have been, that she could have used, that could have been easily concealed. A small Derringer, for example. But it's amazing, you know, people, again, desperate to try to whitewash something or sweep it away, they'll come up with something like that. Well, no, she couldn't have had a gun that she could have concealed. So, no, just throw the whole thing out. Before even looking at the obvious evidence, looking at her behavior. My God, we don't have to know what kind of gun she used. You can see the puff of smoke. You can see the trail of the bullet made as it exited out the front of his head. It's over. Along with all the other bizarre crap that she was pulling in that car that day and everything she said after and the, you know. You gotta look at the big picture. Once you do that, you don't have to wonder what kind of gun she used. She had one. That's it. People don't know how to step back and look at the panoramic view. They'll take one issue like that and then run off with it and think they got something, ignoring mounds of other evidence. I wonder, why? How is it that I can see things, and, you know, my listeners as well, how is it that we can see things that so many other people can't? We got the same goddamn brain, essentially, the same amount of frickin' neurons. Blows my mind. And why can't most people think like that? Step outside the box, step back, get the big picture. Don't just look at one issue and think, yeah, forget that whole idea. This one thing right here. You can't look at one issue. You got to look at all the issues. You know how many times I've debated with people? I used to do it on Pal Talk a lot, not so much anymore, but just because my freaking blood pressure can't take it. But, when my turn came up on the mic, I would just, boom, ramble off fact after fact after fact after fact after fact. And, you know, I people would often come to the mic and say, wow, after that performance, you know, anything I say, I don't think it's going to have any effect. You know, you just blew me away. But they would say, the problem is, though, is you dealt with so many issues you know, I, how do I deal with that? How can I answer anything you said? You brought up so many points, but that's the whole thing, guys. You have to, when you're dealing with conspiracy, and that's usually what I was arguing, is, you know, like things about 9/11. When you're dealing with a conspiracy of this nature, you can't just focus on one small aspect. You have to bring things in from multiple angles so people get the big picture. But most people can't do that. I don't understand it. So many times I had people on Pal Talk telling me, oh, you're bringing too many things in. It's too much. You have to. People seem to want to focus just on one little aspect. Let's not talk about what the whole elephant looks like. Let's just talk about this one little hair on his trunk. God damn it. No. Step back. Look what you're dealing with. It's not just one little hair. You're dealing with a big beast. It's got a tail. It's got four legs. It's got this long frickin' nose, trunk for a nose, big floppy ears. People can't handle all of those details all at once. They can't, but that's what they need to do. I don't get it. I really don't get it. If somebody has some insight on that, let me in on it, because I've never been able to figure that out. So many times I've had people say that to me. You know, you're bringing too much information. Too much. Okay, you can't get enough of this. You have to get the big picture. It doesn't matter to argue the little fine points. Sometimes people do that as a diversion, you know, so that they don't want people getting the big picture. But no, a lot of people honestly just can't handle the big picture, can't handle too much information. Their brains don't seem to be able to simultaneously take into consideration. You know, I do that a lot when I, in fact, all the time, when I'm putting notes together, I'm constantly thinking of previous shows I've covered that are related to this. What else can I bring into this discussion? You know, so I'm referring back to old notes. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. I want to include this. You know, I try as much as I can to get the panoramic view, even though I'm covering, like right now, we're talking about the Lincoln era. You know, I still try to bring other stuff in to put it into perspective, you know, but most people don't. They just don't do that. I don't freaking get it. Anyway, another even bigger reason for Lincoln's assassination is that he no doubt angered the tribe in Charleston who ran the slave trade. So there was some definite animosity. I don't have any figures on it, but I would say probably split 50-50. There were those in Charleston who really didn't give a damn. They didn't. But there were those that did. And because there were enough of them that did, to appease them, okay, yeah, go ahead, take them out. Who cares? We already got what we wanted from them. Look how many tribe members profess to be atheists, guys. You know how many times I've heard people say, religion isn't a big thing for them. Most of them are atheists. Guys, once again, don't go by the fact that they claim to be atheists, write books about atheism. A good many of them are freaking lying when they make that statement. They lie about everything else, God damn it. You think they're telling the truth about that? I'm not denying that there are genuine atheistic, you know, elite Jews out there, but my God, guys, a lot of them are lying to fool the goy. They love their tribal religion, and they're following it to a T. And they're thinking they have the blessing of their God guiding them along to creating a freaking Jew world order. Anyway, one of the main reasons they lie is they don't want you to know that they're following their Jew God. They don't want you to realize, because they have so many duped goy out there, duped by that damn book of theirs, they don't want them to realize that they are, in fact, following the game plan laid out in that book. You know how many Jew-wise Christians there are out there who can read the protocols and see it for what it is, but they can't read their own goddamn holy book? and realize that it's the same thing? It's the same freaking thing. I don't call that book the 2,500-year-old Protocols of the Lunar Hills of Zion for nothing. It is. That's why a great many of them claim to be atheists. They're not, guys. Some of them maybe, yeah, you know, undoubtedly, but most of them who claim to be atheists, they are not atheists. They want you to think that they're opposed to that book so that you'll think it's not that important. I've had listeners email me expressing that same thing. You focus on religion too much. It's not a big deal. Most Jews don't even care about religion. Oh, Jesus Christ. And why do you believe they don't care? Because they said so? Really? You believe them? Religion has been their biggest trump card for fooling the goy down through the centuries. And it still is, guys. It still is. Even though, you know, the numbers are dwindling, people are pulling away from this BS, there's still a massive amount of them who are perfect suckers for it. So by them claiming they're against it, boy, oh boy, is their purpose served. You're going to think, and many do. I have some listeners who think along that line. There must be something to it. They're so against it. Oh, God damn it. Their powers of deception are far grander than what even a lot of Jew-wise people believe. They're far better at deception. Far, far better. Anyway, back to the notes there. Let's look at some of Lincoln's friends in high places. Of course, in the next set of notes we'll be covering, we're going to look at that in much more detail. But for now, let's look at a few examples here. Lincoln, without question, was totally in bed with big money, big tribal money. He's been praised as a man of the people, Honest Abe. You know, one who stood up to corrupt banking powers. Nothing could be further from the truth. We'll be right back.
Now, let's hear from a Jewish academic.
My concern is doing away with whiteness. Whiteness is a form of racial oppression, sure. The suggestion is that it is somehow possible to separate whiteness from oppression, and it is not. There can be no white race without the phenomenon of white supremacists. In the same way, if you abolish racial oppression, you do away with whiteness. Treason to whiteness is loyalty to humanity.
Your views are fairly well received in academia.
Yes, they're legitimate. Not to say that everyone agrees, but sure. And the task is to bring this minority together in such a way that it makes it impossible for the legacy of whiteness to continue to reproduce it.
This is Renegade Broadcasting.
Hey guys, welcome back. So, if you were just talking about Lincoln and his seeming opposition to big money, but in reality, guys, what he was doing with one hand, he undid with his other one. Like so much of what is done in Washington today, Lincoln pushed for and got passed legislation that favored big business at public expense. So you can claim all you want that he was against big money and, I used to fall for that too. I used to believe that he was against a central bank. It was all rhetoric for the public. But behind the scenes, it was a different story. And if these notes don't do it for you, where do you see what I'm going to share with the next set of notes going into next week? It's probably, like I said, it's probably going to take several days to pour through all that material, but it is mind-blowing. But anyway, let's look at one example here. On May 20th, 1862, Lincoln signed into law the Homestead Act, which served to manage the distribution of land, allowing an abundance of it to, or allocating an abundance of it, to private mining, railroad, and timber corporations, which made the Republican Party and its leaders very popular with big business. Does that sound familiar? Wasn't much difference with the Republican Party back then as there is now. Not that the Democratic Party gives up frog's fat ass about the poor, but you see it more brazenly in Republican administration. You know, the Democrats are screwing the little guy too, but in a different way, more through raising taxes. But Lincoln did the classic Bushian type of crap, benefiting big, big money, big Jewish money, as we'll see later on. Meanwhile, the Immigration Bureau encouraged unrestrained immigration. What does that sound like? While these measures helped the nation's economic output and accelerated population growth into the American West, it was just about exploiting immigrants, that's all it was, like it is today, to the loss of Native Americans, of course. These measures also serve to provide corporations with cheap labor, massively increasing their profits and their power. They'll always sell this crap to you, though, like it's something great. Oh, no. Again, not that I'm against immigration, guys. No, this whole country is based on immigrants coming over here. The problem lies with massive, unrestrained immigration, illegal immigration en masse, without limits, without any regulation, and then they'll sell this to you like it's a good thing. Oh, that's what helped build this great nation. That's what helped build big business. Nobody wins when you have a policy like this, except big business. That's it. Nobody else. Nobody else. The general population of this country doesn't win, and even the immigrants coming over here don't win. They get screwed too. Even though they might get a little kickback benefits that even Americans aren't privy to. You know, their culture is getting lost in the process. They're losing, just like we're losing our culture. But look how this type of crap was going on way back then as well. Same reasons at the hand of the same scum. And then, if they can't get you with the "it's in the nation's best interest" rhetoric, then ultimately they'll fall back on, "well, you're just a bigot." When in the meantime, over in Israel, you don't see mass immigration with wide open frickin' doors. God damn, what the hell with their BS. This American system, a mercantile economic system that Alexander Hamilton advanced, was suspiciously similar to Rothschild's European plan, as described in his Hazard Circular of July 1862, where capital controlled labor by controlling wages with government assistance. Lincoln was playing right along with that, and yet they got people praising him as a martyr, as a great hero.
They murdered our great president.
Lincoln, of course, was a freaking railroad lawyer, ladies and gentlemen, with close connections to that industry. And here he is, rolling the red carpet out for them as he shafts everybody else. And they call it something that's in your best interest. He focused on legislation controlling transportation and communications during the Civil War in such a way that favored the monopolies running these industries. Bottom line, end of story. Wartime also saw the growth of private industry related to supplying the troops, which later grew into what is now called the military-industrial complex. Guess who was behind all of that? Guess what companies he favored? They were tribal-run companies, personal friends of his. Some of them were friends from very early on, from years earlier in his young adult life. The Carnegies, who made it big in the railroad business, got major government contracts and were later awarded other government favors as well. Another recipient of government contracts and favors was the American Telegraph Company. And, like today, there was a swinging door between big corporations and high-level positions in Washington. I'm not going into the tribal background of this right now because we're going to be thoroughly covering that later. But, you know, for one example, Thomas Eckert, who was a Jew, had served as a Western Union executive and then later became Assistant Secretary of War from 1865 to 1867. Thomas Scott of the Pennsylvania Railroad was complained about because of his outlandish price gouging and profiteering. The company's earnings grew by 40% in 1861, for example. So Congress convened a, quote, investigation. But with the Jew Simon Cameron serving as Secretary of War at the time, who had major investments in the railroad business, this investigation didn't go anywhere. Surprise, surprise. In fact, nothing came of it. It not only didn't go far, it didn't go anywhere because of, quote, faulty record keeping, we're told. Oh, my God. Meanwhile, Lincoln, with Republican support, created the Bureau of Agriculture. Sounds like crap FDR pulled later on May 15th, 1862, ostensibly to feed the troops, but it actually imposed federal policies on farming, agriculture, and food, directed by a commissioner. Lincoln and his party also authorized the first of the Morrill Land Grant Colleges Act on July 2nd, 1862, to fund a system of industrial colleges, which allocated 20,000 acres of federal land to each eligible state for its use in creating institutions, you know, to teach science, classical studies, agriculture, military strategies, and other pursuits. But it was all BS. The money was all allocated to his buddies that ran all the operations. All this did, in addition to that, was to encourage political corruption, eased the way for a myriad of giant firms, and set the stage for government control, i.e. socialism, of higher education through dependency on federal frickin' funding. That's where we're at to this day, guys. The control is not direct, so most people don't realize it's even there over academia. But the truth is, if they get a non-compliant professor that's making trouble for them, all that needs to be done is have a phone call made to the president of that college or university, and the next thing you know, that professor is silent. They have the threat of not receiving government grant money hanging over their heads. Well, you know, not that they have to bribe or coerce these college presidents. Most of them are frickin' tribe members themselves. But they do have to, on occasion anyway, bribe or coerce a professor. So they got a call from Washington. Hey, look, this is how we suggest you proceed with this. Tell him blah, 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 you know. But Lincoln set all of this in place, guys. It goes back to him. As it turns out, Skull and Bones acquired all of the Morrill Act land grant entitlements, ladies and gentlemen, for New York and Connecticut, which they applied to any new construction at Cornell and Yale. Lincoln not only utilized the telegraph network to monitor and direct troop movements, you know, during the war, but also in the ongoing war against Native Americans and the further theft of their Western lands. As the demand for oil increased during the war, profits proportionately soared. The price of a barrel went from 10 cents to $5 in a very short time. In 1863, Andrew Carnegie earned $17,868.67 from an initial investment of a block of discounted $10 shares. And all because of Lincoln's sleazy corporate favoring policies. Carnegie's wealth massively increased by investing and manipulating stock in companies like Western Union and Union Pacific. He even started the Keystone Telegraph Company, a nice Masonic name right there, Keystone. Carnegie also had strong Rothschild ties, of course, which is what first got him off the ground in the first place and provided him with his investment wisdom. Anyway, do you still think that Lincoln was for the common man? Perhaps the most powerful Jewish influence on Lincoln was Issachar Zachary. We'll be saying a lot more about him. Whoa, boy, I had no idea what a monkey that guy was. Classic tribe member. He first appeared in Lincoln's life as his foot doctor and soon became an unofficial advisor. Yay, even a spy. He would send him on these spy missions in the South. The New York World wrote in 1864 that Zachary, quote, enjoyed Mr. Lincoln's confidence perhaps more than any other private individual, and was perhaps the most favored family visitor to the White House. Is that cozy? Like I said, we'll have more to say on that sleaze bag probably not until Monday. Or Tuesday, for that matter. I think it's later in those notes. It'll take a while to go through them. But where do you see? Oh, where do you see what's coming? Lincoln had a lot of tribe member buddies, ladies and gentlemen. All, in fact, of his top buddies and closest confidants were tribe members. But anyways, let's take a look at Lincoln's alleged, and I do mean alleged, stand against the banks. Like Andrew Jackson, as I pointed out a few years back, I think it was on Oracle, Lincoln is falsely hailed as having stood against the Jewish money powers of his day, refusing to take high-interest loans from them to pay the debt incurred by the Civil War. But the reality is that Lincoln, like Jackson, was actually firmly in bed with these very banking powers, as we've already seen. Yet, just like Jackson, Lincoln was seemingly vehemently opposed, at least in the public eye, as being staunchly opposed to them, opposed to the bankers. This is the game they play. If he claimed, this is how the public reasoned, you know, because Lincoln said he was so against them and spoke on several occasions against them, why, it must be true, right? But once you realize he was a tribe member and totally in bed with the top elitist tribe members of his day, how genuinely opposed could he really have been? But let's look at some of these statements. For example, he once stated, the money power preys upon the nation in times of peace and conspires against it in times of adversity. It is more despotic than monarchy, more insolent than autocracy, more selfish than bureaucracy. I see in the near future a crisis approaching that unnerves me and causes me to tremble for the safety of my country. Corporations have been enthroned. An era of corruption in high places will follow. Guys, he facilitated this high corruption, for Christ's sake. Is this an applaudable statement, an applaudable quote? Yeah, it is. But did he mean it? Who? Was Winston Churchill's comments about the international Jewish conspiracy applaudable? Yes. Was it true? Absolutely. They now have the Russian people gripped by the hairs of their head. They've been behind every major revolution in our history. Blah, 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 blah. He talked about the French Revolution. Oh, absolutely. They were behind the creation of communism. Absolutely. Every bit of it is frickin' true. But did he mean it? Was he opposed to them? Oh, Jesus Christ, no frickin' way. He was one of their biggest arse lickers ever. And unfortunately, so it is here with Mr. Stinkin' Lincoln. He's lying, guys. He's not against any of this. He helped to facilitate it more than any other previous president, more than all previous presidents combined. Did they all have tribal blood? Were they all part of the royal bloodline? Yes, they were. But none of them had as much tribal blood in their veins as this guy. We'll see. He went on to say, the money power of the country will endeavor to prolong its reign by working upon the prejudices of the people until the wealth is aggregated in a few hands and the republic is destroyed. Again, oh, rah, rah, freaking rah, yeah, great quote. But it's all BS, it's all rhetoric. He helped to facilitate aggregating the nation's wealth in the hands of a few and helped to destroy the republic. His frickin' phony war. helped tremendously in that direction. In many ways, not just by, you know, dividing the country and killing so many people, but my God, by setting up a system of despotic, centralized control that's still with us to this day. The Republic is already destroyed, ladies and gentlemen. It's been destroyed since Lincoln. People just don't realize it yet. Just like our economy is already screwed. It's been screwed since 1913. How could it be otherwise when it's in the hands of the most notorious criminals of all recorded frickin' human history? It was screwed already, even though people didn't yet see the signs of it, immediately. They're not going to show you signs of it immediately. It would be too obvious. But it was already over once that goddamn system was set up. As was the case with Jackson, this seeming opposition to the banks was mere political rhetoric intended for public consumption. Behind the scenes, it was a totally different story. Let's take a closer look at how Lincoln played the money game. Union soldiers were paid with interest-free treasury notes authorized by Congress on July 17, 1861, to the tune of $50 million. These notes circulated on a par with gold. But when Lincoln later needed additional financing, the government negotiated with New York's Rothschild financiers, who then offered Lincoln a high-interest $150 million loan. Lincoln's advisors then stepped in and urged him not to go along with this offer, since it would create a serious debt problem. It was suggested instead that the government issue its own printed money interest-free. Thus, Congress enacted a bill on February 25, 1862, to print $150 million of such paper currency. But there was one stipulation. The congressman who issued this bill actually represented the interests of New York's Jewish bankers. And so this whole thing was a setup from the word freaking go. Lincoln was probably told that an outright high interest loan would be too obvious and would incur a public outcry, necessitating the need of taking a different route. So here's how the game worked. This bill permitted the issuing of greenbacks only if individuals, the bankers and their agents, could convert the bills into bonds and vice versa. Since the New York bankers controlled the value of gold, they were now able, to manipulate the value of the bonds at will, and thus turned the interest-free, quote-unquote, currency into a massive money-making enterprise, buying low and selling high. Thus, in effect, Lincoln did indeed take high-interest loans to pay the war debt, but it was done through a backdoor fashion. Oh, there's always some little scheme up their sleeves, ladies and gentlemen. If one thing doesn't work, they'll try another. It's not enough to shut their system down. You got to shut them down, which is why, once again, Ron Paul, ladies and gentlemen, is a massive freaking fraud. He is. He is. Sorry, but he is. Oh, did I ever hail the speeches he used to give before Congress back in the 80s, him and goddamn Jesse Helms, another one that I thought was a hero, a champion of democracy. Well, not democracy, but a champion of freedom, and a true patriot, blah, blah, blah. What a bunch of crockery. Jesse Helms was a rabid member of the CNP, ladies and gentlemen, the Council on National Policy, a religious version of the Council on Frickin' Foreign Relations. his rhetoric was just like Ron Paul's. It's all BS. It's all window dressing. While it is true that the Federal Reserve is the cause of our economic woes, he's right about that. Yes, of course. Got to throw some truth in there to reel the suckers in. But his solution to the problem, ladies and gentlemen, is to get us back on the gold standard. I used to fall for that, too. I used to think, yep, that's what we got to do. Get rid of the fiat currency. Yeah, we got to get rid of the fiat currency, all right. But the gold standard, when it's the tribe manipulating the gold market, what the hell difference would that make? And he talked about getting rid of the Federal Reserve and replace it with what? Another enterprise run by the tribe. Did he ever once mention the source of the problem with the Federal Reserve? No. All he's talking about is changing the window dressing, but keeping everything the same inside the store. The same scumbag merchant with the same sleazy merchandise. Just change the window dressing. That's all. God damn it, America. Get a clue. Anyway, what I just mentioned wasn't the only problem with the Lincoln-issued greenbacks. An amendment was tacked onto the bill that required this exception clause phrase to be printed on each bill issued. And I quote, good for all debts, both public and private, except duty on imports and interest on government debts, which were acceptable only in gold. Can you frickin' imagine that? So here it was, ladies and gentlemen. Here it was. He was borrowing worthless pieces of paper that would only be acceptably paid back in gold. Worthless pieces of goddamn paper with just some magic numbers printed on them that were only acceptable. The debt thereof was only acceptable to be paid back in gold. Jesus Christ almighty. And you think he was a hero of the bankers? I mean, of the general public against the bankers. You think he was standing against the bank? He was a hero of the bankers, but not of we the people. Oh, no, no, no. Oh, but he printed greenbacks. Take a look at the greenbacks. What did it say on them? God damn it. Unfreaking believable. Paper was lent out with gold being paid in return. A classic tribal rigged frickin' scam. He was not against the bankers. That wonderful, applaudable quote I just read, and there's a few more circulating out there like that. It's all rhetoric, ladies and gentlemen. It didn't mean a damn thing. But how many mindless truthers sing his praises. As you might guess, this little scheme resulted in the devaluation of the greenbacks right off the bat to about 30 cents on the frickin' dollar. In July of 1862, Congress issued yet another $150 million in greenbacks with the same ability to convert notes into bonds and the same requirement to debt. It's unbelievable. All right, guys. Another short break. We'll be right back. Same time every night. Fall to the ground and I wake up. So I get out of bed, put on my shoes and in my head, thoughts fly back to the break of. These four walls are closing in. Look at the picture.
From the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion.
Oy, the Gentiles are a flock of sheep, and we are their wolves. And you know what happens when the wolves get hold of the flock. There is another reason also why they will close their eyes, for we shall keep promising them to give back all the liberties we have taken away as soon as we have quelled the enemies of peace and tamed all parties. It is not worthwhile to say anything about how long a time they will be kept waiting for this return of their liberties.
Guys, welcome back. So in regards to the second issuing now, this bill that called for the issuing of another 150 frickin' million dollars of greenbacks, in July of 62, Congress, as a result of this July 62 bill, there was a letter written by Senator John Sherman to his Rothschild master back in London, in which he made this these comments. The few who understand the system will either be so interested in its profits or so dependent on its favors that there will be no opposition from that class, while on the other hand, the great body of people, mentally incapable of comprehending the tremendous advantages that capital drives from the system, will bear its burden without complaint and perhaps without even suspecting that the system is inimical to their interests. My, my, my. Imagine that. This is a system that Lincoln put in place. The very man that so many dupes, even so-called truthers, think was a champion of the masses and, you know, an enemy of the bankers, and that's why they killed him. Oh, please. Like I said, guys, I used to say that myself. Nope, not anymore. That's not why they killed him. Another thing this system did was to drive state-run banks out of business, paving the way for the future creation of a national central bank. Don't forget, at this time, they were popping up all over Europe, and they desperately wanted one here. Just couldn't quite pull it off yet. Took a few more decades. But it wasn't all smooth sailing for the New York bankers. In March of 1863, the government issued another $150 million in greenbacks, but this time, they retracted the conversion feature. The New York Jewish bankers immediately began declaring these issues as fiat currency. And they later worked with Congress to pass a new act in 1865, which resulted in getting rid of the greenbacks, which was finally accomplished by 1879. Wanted to get rid of them again, only because now they weren't profiteering off of them. Lincoln, of course, did other financial favors for his Jewish banking friends in New York, but that's another story. But let's look at his little income tax scheme. On August 5th, 1861, Congress passed the Revenue Act of 1861 to provide increased revenue from imports to pay interest on the general public debt, as well as for other purposes. Congress also imposed a 3% federal income tax beginning in January of 1862. This flat rate tax applied to, quote, the annual income of every person residing in the United States, whether such income is derived from any kind of property or from any profession, trade, employment, or vocation carried on in the United States or elsewhere, on the amount above $800. This applied to anyone and everyone, here or abroad, you know, American citizens. For those citizens living outside the country, the amount was 5%. And then in March of, by the way, that's what the victory tax was in World War II. 5%. And people were shanghaied into taking part in it with the claim that,
well, if you don't, you're not a true patriotic American. Why, you don't care if we win the war?
So, you know, almost nobody protested it, and they figured, well, it's only 5%, and they're going to remove this tax after the war. Right. Not before too long, they introduced automatic withdrawal, so they took it out before you even got your paycheck, and that's it. Look where we're at today. Anyway, later in March of 1862, Congress passed the Revenue Act of 1862, which Lincoln later signed into law on July 1st, introducing the first progressive rate income tax in the country's history. This, like today's income tax, came right from the pages of the freaking Communist Manifesto. This act was designed, quote, to provide internal revenue to support the government and to pay interest on the public debt, as it read. So, as you can see, Lincoln was not at all opposed to enslaving Americans to interest-bearing loans. The great emancipator was actually the great enslaver. He believed in equal opportunity enslavement, didn't he? Under the guise of freeing the slaves, again, he enslaved the entire frickin' country. To assist in collection of this tax, Lincoln set up the Office of Commissioner of Internal Revenue, the then equivalent of today's IRS, to see to it that all employers automatically withheld this tax from their employees' pay, because he knew damn well there'd be a lot of people that wouldn't comply. Oh, does that ever sound familiar? And you thought Lincoln, again, was about emancipation? For Christ's sakes, man. And why did his policies so classically match the policies of today's IRS? Because it was at the hand of the same goddamn people, ladies and gentlemen. That's why. Did you know, by the way, that Karl Marx was a major fan of Mr. Lincoln? That ought to make your hair stand on end. Believe it or not, Karl Marx was a major supporter of and frequently hailed Lincoln on numerous occasions. And perhaps vice versa, for all we know. Especially when you realize Mr. Lincoln was a tribe member. On January 27th, 1862, Karl Marx, during a meeting at St. Martin's Hall in London, helped merge several left-wing groups into what later became the International Workingmen's Association. At this meeting, he urged workers to vigorously oppose their government's intentions of intervening in the American Civil War on the Confederate side. At this time, several Confederate officials, such as James Murray Mason and John Slidell, were in London seeking financial support for the Confederacy. Later, on February 2nd, news of this meeting appeared in Vienna's Die Press, written by Karl Marx himself. That was the paper that he edited. In the article entitled "A London Workers' Meeting," Marx encouraged workers to exert pressure on London politicians by engaging in massive demonstrations against supporting the Confederacy. He played a major role in preventing London from supporting the Confederacy. There was talk initially of them doing just that. Marx played a key role in blocking that. In the meantime, over in America, the Union naval blockade had stopped the majority of cotton from getting to the British textile mills, resulting in work stoppages, creating a desperate situation for textile workers in England. But Marx, through his relentless propaganda, had them convinced that their plight was a worthy sacrifice for a higher cause. Unbelievable. Oh, yeah, he was for the worker. Yeah, right. He was hoping to incite a revolution or a civil war in England, just like, you know, what had been going on in America. In another Die Press article, just like he had incited revolutions all across Central Europe, you know, all the German revolutions. There was one in Italy at the time. I'll be doing a show on that coming up in the future. In another Die Press article, Marx thusly praised Lincoln for his Emancipation Proclamation, saying that it was, quote, the most important document of American history. Lincoln's manifesto on the abolition of slavery in the history of the United States and in the history of humanity. Lincoln occupies a place beside Washington. Never yet has the new world scored a greater victory than in this instance. Unbelievable, man. Interestingly, the Republican, a wartime paper printed in Springfield, Massachusetts, stated that Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation would produce, quote, the greatest social and political revolution of the age. Revolution. I wonder Marx loved Lincoln so much. In fact, Marx himself referred to the Civil War as a world-transforming revolutionary movement. God damn it. Anything that involves massive bloodshed of the goy, chaos, confusion, degradation, division, they're always on top of it, aren't they? Why would Marx praise Lincoln and do everything in his power to give support to the man? Why, ladies and gentlemen? Further along this line, Lincoln once stated that the right of any people is to throw off, to revolutionize their existing form of government and to establish such other in its stead as they may choose. I read this quote yesterday, but again, it's so fitting in this context. Here he was, hypocritically stating everyone has the right to overthrow the yoke of a government that isn't working in their interest. And yet there he was denying the South that very right when they had every right to do so. Anyway, all the while that Marx was praising Lincoln for advancing liberty and equality, Lincoln, of course, just like Marx, never had any such aspiration. The Emancipation Proclamation actually called for compensated emancipation and colonization, which was another way of saying deportation. Lincoln intended to send freed black slaves to either West Africa, the Caribbean, or Central America. So he wasn't for, you know, integrating them into society like so many people think. he's hailed by whites and blacks as some hero, some champion of human rights. His real views of blacks were best summed up in 1858 during his final debate with Douglas. He said, "I will say then that I am not, nor ever have been, in favor of bringing abolition in any way, in favor of bringing about in any way the social and political equality of the white and black races, that I am not, nor ever have been, in favor of making voters or jurors of Negroes, nor qualifying them to hold office, nor to intermarry with white people. And inasmuch as they cannot so live, while they do remain together, there must be the position of superior and inferior. And I, as much as any other man, and it am in favor of having the superior position assigned to the white race." Now, you know, I know there's a lot of people out there who would hail this and think that this is something great, but do understand, regardless where you fall on the race issue, Lincoln here was speaking as a Jew, not as a white man. Let's make that very clear. All right. Anyway, when Lincoln was reelected in 1864, the Working Men's Association in London sent him a congratulatory message drafted up by Marx himself, in which Lincoln was addressed as the son of the working class. Oh, my God. A hero, a champion of the working class. He was praised therein for having waged, quote, a noble struggle to emancipate an enslaved race. God damn it, man. Look how they phonily jump on the bandwagon here to advance their interests and make it look like it's in other people's interest. Look at this monkey. Oh, yes, he's a champion of the black man. When in reality, you know what real emancipation resulted from Lincoln?
Jewish emancipation, ladies and gentlemen.
Lincoln did more to advance the cause of so-called Jewish emancipation. You might recall I did a show on that a while back, on all of the instances in the 19th century of so-called Jewish emancipation. They don't call it that here. They didn't want you to know that that's what Lincoln was doing, but that's exactly what he was doing. He fought, as we're going to see in the next set of notes we'll cover on Monday, he fought relentlessly to give all kinds of rights to the tribe here and called any opposition thereto, you know, bigoted, prejudice, you know, blah, 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 blah. That's why Marx is praising him here under the guise of, oh, you freed the blacks. No, that's just frickin' rhetoric for public consumption. In reality, guys, he was praising him for his service to the tribe. Oh, wait till you see what he did for them. He was very loyal to them. In February of 1865, Charles Francis Adams, the U.S. ambassador to Britain, told Marx that his comments, quote, are acceptable by him, meaning Lincoln. He was speaking on Lincoln's behalf. So there you go. There not only was a fondness on the part of Marx for Lincoln, but it worked reciprocally, didn't it? It was a fondness of Lincoln on Lincoln's part for frickin' Marx. Your comments are acceptable to him, meaning Lincoln. Unbelievable. Lincoln praised Marx. That's the only instance I know of that. There might have been others. Maybe I missed some, or maybe there's been others that just weren't recorded in history. But there we have one right there. It was reciprocal. You could argue that Lincoln was a Marxist. All his policies were socialistic, ladies and gentlemen. Again, which is why goddamn Marx praised him in the first place. Wow, wow, wow. Seemingly regulating big business, right? Oh, isn't that what Marx was supposed to be all about? Yet look how the regulation played out. All the regulations played out in the, you know, in the interest of big business to screw out of existence their competition. That's how all of our corporate legislation has worked, isn't it? Just like the ever famous, you know, I've made reference to this numerous times over the years. Let me mention it again here in this context. The 1917 Trading with the Enemy Act. Oh, God damn it. I love that one. That is got to be one of the most blatantly obvious in your face scam pieces of frickin' legislation in all of American history. And it's so easy. I mean, it's a short bill. You can easily, you don't have to read through mounds. That's how they write them today. You know, frickin' 2,000, 3,000 pages of crap so that it's so easy to hide the real agenda on a small footnote on page 537 that nobody pays attention to. But that bill is very short and very easy to see it for what it is. You know, in essence, it says, this bill prevents United States corporations from trading with enemies belligerent toward the United States, except those that have special concessions from the president. So was that bill designed to regulate, you know, to legislate and prevent corporations from trading with the enemy? No. It was only designed to prevent certain corporations, i.e. small competitive corporations, from muscling in on these monopolistic, big, tribal-run corporations from, you know, muscling in on their turf. How many of our bills have been written like that over the years? God damn it. And how many asses fall for the rhetoric that, oh, yeah, our government is there to stop that kind of thing. It did go on, but the government took measures to stop it. Who took the measures? The very corporations themselves that people think are being regulated by such laws. They're the ones that write these goddamn bills. And they write them in such a way that their interests are actually being served under the guise of, you know, controlling corporate greed. No, it facilitates it, damn it. And Lincoln did the same damn thing. People think he was against big banks and you know, taking a stand against them and working in favor of it. No. He didn't give a damn about the general masses. If he did, he wouldn't have staged that phony-ass war, ladies and gentlemen, that waged on for frickin', you know, over 4 years, caused the death of 750,000 people. And those are just, you know, the ones that died. How many tens of thousands more were maimed for life from that damn thing? You ever stop to realize how horrific warfare was? I mean, it's always horrific, but my God, the guns that they used didn't shoot very far. So when they fought, it was one row of troops marching toward another row of troops. And then they would just open fire on each other, you know, 15, 20 feet away from each other or whatever. It's unbelievable. Just keep firing until, you know, there was no one left to kill. And then at the end, okay, let's count the bodies. Oh, we won. We got more people still living on our side. Horrific. The insanity of it all. War is insane anyway, but my God, people signed up for that? And for what? Duped back then, just as they are today, given false, phony-ass pretext every time. Oh, man. Guys, honestly, has there ever been a real, legitimate war ever fought for legitimate reasons that was in fact inescapable? Has there really? Do you know of any? I guarantee if you think there is one, let me know and I'll show you otherwise. I don't know of any. All the years I've been studying, you know, wars all through the centuries, all through the millennia, not only do I find there's never been a just cause, a real just cause, but they've always been frickin' tribal rigged every time. They orchestrated them. They profiteered off of them. God damn it. But yeah, lo and behold, the Civil War was no exception. Staged. Needlessly. So again, guys, there's no question. Lincoln was a bastard. And we're going to find out, starting on Monday, why he was a bastard. His tribal connections are absolutely astonishing. Not just because he kissed their hind parts at every turn and surrounded himself with tribe members. He did that because he was one of them himself. And the evidence of that is just absolutely unfreaking deniable. You won't believe. I thought I had him figured out years ago when I first aired this set of notes that we just finished. Oh, no, I hadn't even scratched the surface. My God, it's, and let me tell you, these notes, I only took the best information that I was, you know, running into. There's a lot I didn't even include. It was relatively insignificant compared to this stuff. But with all the best stuff, I amassed, like I said, about 45 freaking pages worth of material. So it's going to take a little while to go through it, but it's got to be done. This information has got to get out there. People need to realize not just that he was a scumbag, but why he was a scumbag, and to the extent that he was a scumbag. It's mind-blowing. Anyway, that's about it for this show. So have a great weekend. I hope that their latest up-to-datest report is correct, and we're not going to get inundated like we were supposed to. Oh, they were talking originally couple of feet with this damn thing, but now it looks like just a couple, maybe 2 or 3 inches. But like I said, that's still 2 or 3 inches too much for me. I hate the damn stuff. I can't freaking see. People will argue, oh, it's pretty to look at. Not when you got to shovel it, deal with the slippery. I can't see. All right, guys, have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday. You don't want to miss this show. Very interesting stuff coming up. See you then. Take care.
If you enjoy listening to Renegade Broadcasting, but are not also reading Renegade Tribune, you're missing out. We have some of the most insightful and hard-hitting authors from the past and present, covering some of the most taboo and controversial subjects. The Tribune is something you'll want to check out every single day. Perhaps you have what it takes to be an author. Sign up and submit your piece. Join us at RenegadeTribune.com.